Okay, so we are up to Perek Lamed Vav, chapter 36, of which we are going to do this evening, Mitzvah Hashem, the first 15 psukim. And that is a complete unit, because Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Tes Zayin, chapter 36, verse 16, begins a new discussion. And in fact, from that point on, from Perek Lamed Vav Pasuk Tes Zayin, 36:16, for the next several chapters, we have four haftorahs in a row, with just a few psukim interspersed that are not part of the haftorah. First is the haftorah for Parshas Para. Then comes the haftorah for Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach. Then comes the Haftorah for Parshas Vayigash, and then comes the Haftorah for Shabbos Chol Hamoed Sukkos. So all of that is coming up. So tonight we're going to get up to those four. We're not going to do those four tonight, but that's the next, in August, August 26th when we come back, Mitzvah Hashem, that will be what we'll begin with. we'll cover those four Haftorahs. Now tonight's Perek starts off with the first pasuk, V'yatoven Adam Hinavei El Hari Yisrael, prophesy to the mountains of Yisrael, V'amartan, you shall say, Hare Yisrael, Shimu Dvar Hashem, the mountains of Yisrael, meaning of Eretz Yisrael, listen to the word of Hashem. Now the reason why I was late is because I was quickly listening to myself talk it. Top speed, like this. I was listening to myself talk at top speed on the computer, listening to a shiur that we had on July 25th of 07, which was nearly 2 years ago. That was the last class for that season. And we broke after that class for a few weeks until the end of the summer. July 25th of 07, we did Perek Vav, chapter 6. We did 20 chapters ago. It also happens to be, in terms of classes, tonight is our 71st class. That was our 21st class. It was 50 classes ago. The reason I was listening to that class, at least part of it, is because if you turn back, I don't know if all of you have it in front of you, because some of you have it on me. Okay. But Perek Vav, the 6th chapter of Yechezkel, begins, Vayhi Dvar Hashem Elai Lemor, the word of Hashem was to me saying, Ben Adam, son of man, Sim Panacha El Hare Yisrael. Put your face towards the mountains of Yisrael. V'inavei aleihem, and you shall prophesy about them. V'amartan, you shall say, Hare Yisrael, mountains of Yisrael. Shimu Dvar Hashem Elokim, listen to the word of Hashem God. And it mimics some of the first few psukim here in Perek Lamed Vav. Or I should say, this one mimics that one. That one was all about destruction, and this Perek is all about reconstruction. All about the redemption that follows the destruction. So, which of course fits in because the first half of Yechezkel is all about the destruction before we switched over to redemption, to Geula. But this Perek in particular is meant to mirror Perek Vav, chapter 6. And what I was trying to listen to quickly now was to remind myself of the question of why the mountains. What's significant about the mountains that Yechezkel talks to the mountains of Yisrael, both in Perek Vav and here in Perek Lamed Vav? Why talk to the mountains? What's significant about that? So before we answer that question, let's read the first 15 psukim all together, and then when we discuss the Perek in more detail, we'll lead off with this question. So keep this question in mind as we're reading, and then we can discuss it. So again, Perek Lamed Vav begins, V'atav en Adam, you son of man, Hinavei al Hare Yisrael, prophesy to the mountains of Yisrael, V'amartan, you shall say, Hare Yisrael, the mountains of Yisrael, Shimu Dvar Hashem, listen to the words of Hashem. Komar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God, Yan Amar Ha'oyev Aleichem He'ach. Since the enemy said about you, He'ach, He'ach, Rashi understands, is a word meaning, what's that?
Hooray.
Hooray, right, joy, happiness. U Vamos Olam Limorasha Ha'isalanu. And the enemy says, the Vamos Olam, the high places of the world, shall be an inheritance for us. Eretz Yisrael is considered to be gavoa mikol ha'aratos, higher than all other lands. We can discuss that as well when we go through this a little bit more carefully. And so the enemy was saying, the high points of the world, meaning Eretz Yisrael, is mine for an inheritance. In other words, we're going to throw out the Jews and we're going to take it over. Since the enemy said that, Lachain hinavei v'amarta, therefore you shall prophesy and you shall say, Kamar Hashem Elokim, so said Hashem God, Yan b'yan shamos v'sha'of eschem misaviv, because they have shamos means they've been talking about your destruction. V'sha'of means that they've taken joy in your destruction all around you. Liyoschem morasha misheris hagoyim, that you shall be an inheritance for the remnant of the nations. Vata'alu al sfas lashon v'dibas am, and you have come up on the tongues of lips and the talkings of the nations. In other words, the nations are talking about Eretz Yisrael, talking about what happened to it, talking about how they plan on taking it over. Lachain harei Yisrael, therefore, mountains of Yisrael, shimu dvar Hashem Elokim, listen to the word of Hashem God. Ko amar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God, leharim v'lagivaos, to the mountains and the hills, la'afikim v'lagayos, to the valleys and to the deep valleys. I'm sorry, just one moment. Yeah, Afikim would be more of a like a riverbed or a creek bed. And Gaios are valleys. Velacharavos, Hashomimos, and to the areas that have been destroyed. Vele Arim, Haneezavos, and the cities that have been forsaken. Asher Hayu Levaz Ulalag, that were degraded and were shamed. Misheris Hagoyim Hashem Yisaviv, to the remnants of the nations that are around. Lachain Kamar Hashem Elokim, therefore so says Hashem God. Imlo Be'esh Kinasi Dibarti, if not with the fire of the jealousy of my word I've spoken. Al Sheiris Hagoyim, on the remnant of the nations, Val Edom Kula, and on all of Edom. Asher Nasnu Esarti Lahem, that they've placed my land for them, lemorasha, for inheritance, besimchas kol levav, with the joy of all hearts, bishat nefesh, without caring, leman migrasha lavaz, in order to chase it away. I guess it means to chase away the people, and to be desolate, to be degraded. Lachain, so the psukim seem to be constantly an introduction to what he's going to say. Hashem is like leading up to something. But his point is that the nations are constantly talking about Eretz Yisrael, and talking about the desolation, talking about taking it over, and being happy about it. Lachain hinavei al admas Yisrael, therefore prophesy about the land of Yisrael. V'amarta leharim v'lagivaos la'afikim v'lagayayos, and you shall say to the mountains, to the hills, to the creek beds and to the valleys. Kamar Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. Hineni v'kinasi uvachamasi dibarti. Behold, I have spoken with my jealousy and with my anger. Yan klimas goyim nisasem, for you have burdened yourselves with the shame of the nations. So I've spoken with my anger, with my jealousy against the nations. Lachain kamar Hashem Elokim, therefore, so says Hashem God. Ani nasasi es yodi, I have lifted up my hand. If not the nations that are to you around, Hema klima sam yiso, they shall lift their shame. In other words, I swear that they're going to lift their shame. Ve'atem hare Yisrael, and you, the mountains of Yisrael, and pechem titenu, you will give your branches, uferyechem tisu, and you will carry your fruits, leami Yisrael, for my nation Yisrael, ki kervu lavo, for they are close to coming. Ki hineni aleichem, for I, behold, I am upon you, ufanisi aleichem, I will turn to you, v'ne evadetem, you will be worked, meaning the land will be worked, v'ni zaratem, and you will be planted. V'yirbeisi aleichem adam, and I will increase upon you man. I will bring a lot of people upon you. Kol beis Yisrael kulo, all of the house of Yisrael. V'noshvu he'arim, and the cities will be settled. V'hecharavos tibanena, and the destroyed places will be rebuilt. V'yirbeisi aleichem adam uvehema, and I will increase upon you man and beast. V'ravu v'ufaru, they will be many, and they will be fruitful. V'hoshavti eschem kikadmoseichem, and I will return you to the way you used to be. And I will make it better than what you were at first. I will do better for you than what I did for you at first. Vidatem ki ani Hashem, you will know that I am God. V'holachti aleichem adam, and I will put upon you man, as ami Yisrael, my nation Yisrael, v'yireishucha, and they will inherit you. V'hayisa lahem l'nachala, you, the land, will be for them as an inheritance. For the sasif ol meshaklam, and you will no longer continue to throw them off. Kol amar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God. Yan omim lachem, since they say to you, ocheles adam ot, you are a land that eats people, that eats man. Umeshakeles goyayi chayis, and you were a land that threw off its nations. Lachain, therefore, Adam lo soch liod, you will no longer eat man. Vigo yayich lo sechash liod, and your nations you will no longer throw off. Numa Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. Velo ashmia elayich od kalima sagoyim, and I will no longer make heard to you the shame of the nations. Vicherpas amim lo sisi od, and the embarrassment of the nations you will no longer carry. Vigo yayich lo sechash liod, and your nations you will no longer throw off. Numa Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. So this entire 15 psukim, to whom is Hashem speaking?
The land.
He's talking to the land. He's talking to the land about the Bnei Yisrael. You, the land, will no longer throw off the Bnei Yisrael. You, the land, will no longer carry the shame of the nations. The nations are talking negatively about you, the land. And that will no longer happen. So we have many points here to cover. Let's begin with the first observation, which is the focus on the mountains. But let's expand that observation before we try to answer it.
I'm still, I don't know how you call it, perplexed, concerned, unclear. I get clear and I get not clear. You know, we've always been so little as a people, right? I mean, there were probably thousands of other Arabs around, or whatever they were, Egyptians. Why do they care? We're such a little nation. Why do they care? Why do they just not do commerce with us? You know.
So what's the answer? What would you say?
Well, I thought about it. Even if when you hate someone, you know, who wants to be with someone that you hate? You don't hang around them, but. Like, don't they have anything better to do? Hashem runs the world. And
anti-Semitism. Okay, well, let's.
Don't they hate each other? And I mean, I don't get this. You know, I kind of understand anti-Semitism, but it boggles my mind.
There's two points to bear in mind. Number one is that we represent Hashem. So when it says several places in Chumash that anybody who is anti-Jew is anti-God. They go hand in hand.
So if they're like their gods, why would they care about
it? They're anti-God, they're anti-Hashem.
So let's say they like the trees and the statues and things. Like, why do they care that we love Hashem?
They are anti-Hashem. They don't want to feel that there is a Hashem in the world. If they want to rid themselves of Hashem from the world, they have to rid themselves of us. That's number one.
But first of all, they don't even know Hashem.
They are aware of us, and we irk them. because we represent something more.
Isn't that man's contention? But just
one second. The second point is that anti-Semitism is a tool that Hashem uses to keep us on the straight and narrow, as we've mentioned many times. That many times anti-Semitism is a method through which Hashem makes sure that we stay true to Him. It's a method that He doesn't like to use, but He does use it at times. Those are the two main issues behind anti-Semitism. Yeah.
Isn't that always man's contention, that man doesn't want something above him? He has free choice. And we represent that there is a God who does control life in His way. And man will always contend over that.
It's difficult to say that is man's nature, because before the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, the men of the Great Assembly, took away the natural desire for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry, everybody worshipped.
But did Adam himself go against God?
Yeah, he went against...
It's a free choice to further what he was not supposed to
correct
God with.
Correct.
It starts there.
Correct. That's true.
The nature of man.
It's true there is a rebellious nature, but it's not the way we see it today. What we see today is a desire to throw off all forms of worship. That was not the case when the world was created up until a couple thousand years ago, 300 years ago.
God.
What's
there
that?
Was a false God. That
yeah,
before
yeah.
That.
But there was a need to worship. There was a need to worship something that was in, that had power.
Out of fear.
Out of fear. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the focus, the question we have is, why focus on the mountains? But let's expand the question. And that is that here, the Hashem begins by talking to the mountains. Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Beis refers to the mountains. Well, it doesn't actually say mountain in Pasuk Beis. In Pasuk Daled, it begins with the mountains. Therefore, mountains of Yisrael, listen to the word of Hashem. And then it says, so says Hashem to the mountains, the hills, the low valleys and the deep valleys, and the cities that are desolate. So, even though the introduction of the Pasuk was that it's talking to the mountains, but then it becomes a broader discussion that Hashem is saying to all of the geographical locations, not just mountains. And as you move on in the Perek, it goes on to, for instance, in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, therefore prophesy about the land of Israel, no longer specifically mountains, and then it lists mountains along with the other list, the rest of the group, the mountains, the hills, the valleys, the deep valleys. If you go on to Pasuk Ches, again it mentions the mountains, but then second, it moves back to land, if I find the reference. I'm not trying to mention land again. Okay, but you get the idea that you have here a focus on the mountains, but really then it encompasses other types of land, and really it's referring to all of the land of Israel. So why the mountains, and why do the mountains become to represent everything else?
Well, I mean, when I saw prophesy concerning the mountains of Israel, I thought maybe the mountains meant the great people.
Okay.
That's beautiful.
Okay. So the mountains refers to the people. Okay. Okay, that's nice. That's nice. Good. Okay, so hold that thought.
Oh, well, mountains are where we got the Torah. Mountains were where they announced war, whatever. They always went to the mountaintops to make any kind of announcement. So to me, it would be natural to go to the mountains and not to, let's say, you know, the valley first, because that's where all the news When we got news, it was when Moshe found out that he was supposed to go. I mean, he was always on the mountain.
Let's expand that thought a little bit. Why would the mountains be the place where news was spread?
Because you could see the person and hear
them. Okay, because that's where you could see everybody. Okay, good.
You're focusing towards Hashem when you look up at the mountains.
Okay, focusing towards Hashem when you look up at the mountains. Good. So, mountains, we mentioned both these themes last time. We mentioned that mountains represent the Avos. Many times throughout Tanakh we find that the mountains represent the patriarchs and the hills represent the Imahos, the matriarchs. That is often used as a mashal for the Avos and the Imahos. And so, the mountains... We talked about last time how the Jewish people were going astray from the example that had been set by our Avos and Imahos. So Hashem speaks to the mountains, to that which we were not living up to their example. Here, if we're going to use the same idea, the talking to the mountains would mean that the Jewish people are prepared to go back in the ways of our Avos and our Imahos. And we know the land was given to Avraham Avinu, and then it was promised again to Yitzchak and to Yaakov. And our right to the land is because we are descendants of them. The reason why we get Eretz Yisrael is because it was given to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov's descendants. That's why we get it. There's no place in the Torah where the land is given to the Jewish people who leave Mitzrayim. It's not given to them. It's given to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that their descendants will get it. And then when we leave Eretz Mitzrayim, we go to Eretz Yisrael and we take over the land. But that's because it was already given to our ancestors. If we are not, God forbid, if we are not following in their footsteps, if we're not worthy of being called their children, God forbid, then our claim to the land is very weak. Why should we have a claim to the land? If we are deserving of being called the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, if people can look at us and say, they're the children of the Avos and the Imos, we act in that manner, then we have a very solid claim to Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael was given to their descendants, and we are acting like their descendants. And so here, Hashem would be saying to... the reason why mountains would be stressed is to point to the behavior of the people is like the mountains. It reflects the mountains. And that would be a reason, a chus, a merit, to get Eretz Yisrael. That's one theme we touched on back in Perek Vav. Another theme we touched on, yes?
So at the very beginning of Bereshit,
yeah.
You know, there's that paragraph that says here that the first law that was addressed to all Jewry as a nation, he explains that the reason for the Torah's narrative of creation is to establish that God is the sovereign of the universe. He declared to his people the power of his works in order to give them the heritage of the nations. Psalms 111:6. If the nations accuse Israel of banditry for seizing the lands of the seven nations Canaan, Israel can respond, the entire universe belongs to God. He created it and he granted it to whomever he deems it fit.
Correct.
So
he gave it to us.
But here it says he gave it to the Jewish people.
Right.
He doesn't say Abraham, Isaac, Israel.
Yeah, but why did he give it to the Jewish people?
It was the right.
We were the right people because we were their children. That's what it says throughout Bereshit, that Hashem tells Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov he's going to give the land to their children. So it is as their children that we deserve the land. Now the other theme that we touched on back then, which again is applicable now, which many of you said, is that the mountaintop is what you notice. You see the tops of the mountains. When you're trying to commit a clandestine crime, you don't do it on the top of a mountain. Right? You do it at the bottom of a valley, behind a tree or something. Right? But not, you don't go to the top of a mountain. That's not something which would be a place of privacy. So the mountaintop is always the place, like was said before, where news was announced, but it's also where important events happen. As we mentioned last time, it's true the Torah was given on a small mountain. It was given on Har Sinai and not on Har Tavor and not on Har HaKarmel in order to teach us humility, to teach us that Torah can only be learned through humility, and someone who is a Balgaiva, someone who is haughty, will never be able to be Kona Torah, will never be able to acquire Torah. And that's the most important character trait necessary for the acceptance of Torah, is humility above all else. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the greatest sage, the greatest prophet ever, what is his one quality that we know that he possessed, that the Torah actually tells us, is that he was the most humble of all men, Anav Mikol Adam. Because that's the necessary component for the acquisition of Torah. And that's why the Torah was given on Har Sinai and not on one of the huge mountains. But nevertheless, it was given on a mountain. If Hashem truly wanted to teach humility, He could have given the Torah in a deep valley. That would have really shown humility. After all, Har Sinai is a mountain, and therefore it's not completely humble. It's not like a valley in the ground, which really shows humility. So why did it have to be a mountain? The answer is it had to be a mountain, because any important event took place on a mountain. Mountains are what you notice. Mountains are what people see. And so it had to take place on a mountain. But Hashem chose a small mountain to bring out the lesson of humility. But it had to be a mountain. Akedas Yitzchak takes place on a mountain. Of course, the Beis HaMikdash is on a mountain. Moshe Rabbeinu is buried on a mountain. Aaron.
Rosh Chodesh was always announced on a mountain.
Rosh Chodesh was announced on a mountain. Aaron HaKohen was buried on a mountain. There's always the issues of these. Any important event takes place on a mountain, because the mountain is something that people notice, and it's something that people see, something that stands out, and that's what people will.
Go ahead. Does that go along that you ask yourself sometimes what is humility? I love your comment on this. You know what you have done is wonderful, whatever it is. It's just that you know all of that came from Hashem's potential to you. So the mountain really symbolizes that, because it's Hashem saying, look to me in the mountain from whence you came, and it's I who gave you all this potential. So it's like the whole message is there that,
humility. Yeah, the question you're asking is that, is a humble person someone who does not realize how great they are? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know that he was the greatest prophet. He knew that.
Right.
He knew he was the one who was the intermediary to give us the Torah. And he knew no one else was able to do that. So it would be very difficult to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was naive about his greatness. So in what way was he humble? What does being humble mean? Does it mean to trick ourselves into thinking we're less than we are? And so many of the Mefarshim say they're actually two approaches that I'm familiar with. One is what you said, that the differences between us, we think about what makes a person haughty. I'm better than so-and-so, I'm better than so-and-so, I'm better than everybody else. But the differences between us are completely irrelevant once you throw Hashem into the mix. Once you think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the differences between us are it's not just that they're minuscule, they're non-existent. They're irrelevant. Because we're so dwarfed by Hashem, we have nothing without Hashem. Everything we have comes from Hashem. It's not because of us. Mm. We're nothing we have. A person can say, well, I am the wealthiest person in the world, but all that wealth came from Hashem. I am the most intelligent person in the world, but that intelligence came from Hashem. I'm the strongest person in the world, that strength came from Hashem. I'm the most beautiful person in the world, that beauty came from Hashem. It all comes from Hashem. So, where is there room for being proud of what we have over somebody else? I didn't do anything to deserve it. And even if I did work for it, but the fact that the work succeeded is only because of Hashem. Many people work and don't succeed. It's all because only because of Hashem that I was in the right place at the right time and things worked out. And so the differences between us in any area are absolutely irrelevant once you put HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the mix. That's one approach. And you're right, the mountain reflects that because it's not that the humble person doesn't recognize that they are a mountain, it's just they don't put much stock in the fact that they're a mountain. The Ramban writes another approach. It's not a contradictory approach, but it is another approach, which is he says that everybody is given a set of potential. So everybody's given positive aspects about themselves and negative aspects about themselves. Everybody has positive parts of their character and negative parts of their character. We all do, and we all have to work on our negative things and improve them, and we have to take our positive things and use them to the best that we can. Moshe Rabbeinu was keenly aware of all of his all the good things that he had and was able to do, and he was also keenly aware of his faults. And Moshe Rabbeinu approached the world with the perspective that everybody has both faults and good things about them. It all depends on how you use what you have. Moshe Rabbeinu was convinced that he was doing a very poor job of using all those wonderful gifts that Hashem had given him. He had such wonderful gifts. He had such great spirituality. He was so close to Hashem. He knew so much Torah. He felt that he wasn't using his gifts as well as could have been used. And his faults, he felt that he was not conquering his Yetzer Hara the way he should. And he viewed everybody else as doing better with the package that Hashem gave them than he was doing with the package that Hashem gave him. As far as Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned, if he was standing here in this room with us, then he would say that every single one of us was using our own potential better than he was using his potential. And if we would switch places, if Moshe Rabbeinu would be me and I would be Moshe Rabbeinu, in Moshe Rabbeinu's mind, he would be a worse me than I am, and I would be a better him than he is. That's the way he viewed life. So he didn't think he was better than anybody else, because if you were in my shoes, you'd do a better job of being Moshe Rabbeinu than me. That was the way he looked at people. So he never thought he was better than anybody, because they would do a better me than me. And I would do a worse them than them. That was the way he approached life. So it's not that he was unaware of all the greatness that he had. Just he didn't think he was doing such a good job.
So when he speaks, Hashem says, "I can't speak. You know, why are you picking me?" And that's an indication of what you just said, right? Or what about Jethro? When he gets Yisro, he uses Yisro's idea to have Ken's watch him.
Yeah.
He was called down for that because he didn't reach. He didn't think it was his potential to be able to do that.
Who was called down for that?
Your Moshe. Was he? Was he looked down upon by Hashem maybe he looked upon himself in the wrong way, that he divvied out his judgments to the tens under him, and those tens under them, and the tens under
from Parshas Yisro, it appears that it was a good decision.
He was never called down for that.
There is a discussion, there is a pasuk later on in Chumash that seems to indicate that there was a decision that was made that wasn't so great, but it's not clear what decision that it's referring to. Yisro was given all kinds of praise for his advice. So it seems like it was a good decision.
And Moshe for listening to it.
Yeah.
Moshe for listening to it, but I thought that it was the Jewish people that should have said, we want it to come from Moshe Rabbeinu.
That's what Hashem...
The people that were called down.
Right. That's what Moshe says to the Jewish people at the end of his life. It's not clear what it is that they should have rejected. But there is something there that they should have said something else. But Moshe was correct for doing what he did. So the mountains which are always the place where great things happen. So if you're going to talk about the land, all of the land, you're going to focus on the mountains, because those are what stand out. That's what you notice. That's what's there. That kind of represents the rest of the land. So the Hashem's talk is to the mountains, but it really is a discussion about about the entire land. In Perek Vav, where Hashem talks about the destruction, there he focuses a lot on the Avodah Zarah that they did, the idolatry that they did. Where were idols placed? Again, on the mountains, because that was a central place. That was the top. Everybody could see it. Same idea, that the mountain was where people would notice. That's what got, that was out in the open, that was public. So here, Yechezkel addresses the mountains, and he says that the nations have shamed the land of Yisrael. It's a fascinating perek, this first 15 sukkim, because it's as if Hashem has a vendetta against the nations of the world, not because they destroyed Eretz Yisrael, but because they destroyed it and laughed about it. Because they shamed the land. Not the people, which we've talked about shaming the people, and of course Hashem is going to get them for shaming us. But here, in these 15 sukkim, the discussion is about shaming the land of Eretz Yisrael. How dare the nations of the world make fun of Eretz Yisrael, which is what they did. And that Hashem is going to get them for making fun of His land. Making fun of the Jewish people's land. That's something which he doesn't tolerate. It's an interesting thing, the importance Hashem places on the land. This is, of course, a very important lesson for us. We all know the importance of Eretz Yisrael. And we just came through Parshas Shlach, where the Meraglim, or the spies, spoke negatively about what? About the land. That's what they spoke negatively about, and they were taken to task for it. It's so important to be careful to only speak positively about the land, not to speak negatively about the land. We have to be careful, because even we who do appreciate Eretz Yisrael, and we do think very highly, and we all want to go there, etc., the question is, are we careful all the time? Do we ever slip and say something negative like, it's dirty, or, there are, fill in the blank, snakes,
cats.
We shouldn't do that. We should only speak positively about Eretz Yisrael. We should only mention positive things. It doesn't mean that there aren't negative things, but when you love something, you think highly of something, you don't talk about the negative things. You only talk about the positive.
Can you talk negatively about, let's say, a government that has Jews made up in it? Or not Lashon Hara too?
No, that's not Lashon Hara about the land.
No, but I'm saying, are you allowed to, because I hear a lot of people, they're not saying bad things about the land, but they're not terribly fond of
the government.
Of the non-kingship.
Yeah, the non-kingship. Look, it depends on what category they fall into. You got to be careful. You are talking about Jewish people. You got to be careful. You don't have to agree with policies. That's for sure. We can always disagree with policies. If there are those who distinguish themselves as being particularly horrific towards the religious Jews, then they may have entered the category of Russia, in which case there is no prohibition of Lashon Hara about them. But you got to be careful before you put someone in that category. So,
someone says it's hard to earn a living there. Is that against the land?
I wouldn't say that's against the land, but it is discouraging. Mm-hmm. It is discouraging. We want to talk only encouragingly about Eretz Yisrael. Now, when you're asking a good question, because when a couple says they want to talk to me about going to Eretz Yisrael, I will discuss them with them their finances, and when they tell me that, they haven't really worked it out, I will tell them of a stress to them. It's not an easy place to make a living. And don't make this move if you don't know what you're going to be doing there. Right? Because I don't want them getting themselves into a situation where they're in over their heads. Mm-hmm. And to delude ourselves into thinking that we are such great, have such great bitachon, and no, we'll go and we won't know where the money will go, but we'll figure it out when we get there.
God will provide.
Right. That sort of attitude doesn't work. And they're going to have a lot of heartache. Mm-hmm. And so there, the purpose is to keep them from making a decision that's bad for them. So that's litoelis, that's for a purpose. But if you're just sitting on the table and schmoozing, and saying, it's terrible to make a living over there, that kind of thing is a negative discussion about Eretz Yisrael, about living in Eretz Yisrael. And that's the kind of thing we try to avoid.
Why is it you don't hear enough about that God's feet are on Jerusalem? Or is why is it we don't hear much about that? We don't read much about it. And that in itself makes that land so holy.
Yeah.
Is it his feet or is it just you say his throne?
It doesn't say, it just says the land is Hadom Raglai. It says it's my footstool. It says the heavens is where I reside and the land is my footstool. Whatever that means, Hashem doesn't have feet. Whatever it means, that it's his footstool.
Resting place of some sort.
Some sort.
Or the connector. It's the bottom connection to him, because your feet are at the bottom. And wherever the other Yerushalayim is, because it's Yud Mem, it's plural, it's up there somewhere.
Nice.
So it's connectivity, just like the ladder was connected
right.
Until the sin, right? And
right.
Then
very good.
The bars of the ladder fell.
That's a nice explanation. Very nice. Very good.
So it doesn't mention shoes at all.
What's that? No, it doesn't mention shoes. No, just as my footstool.
Isn't it so the shoes carry our soul? That's what walks off on the land.
Uh-huh.
No. But on holy lands, they have to remove their shoes.
That's right, too.
Yeah.
So if his footstool is holy, he can't wear shoes.
This conversation is getting so far afield. Now, there is a bracha in the Tochacha. In the part of the Torah where it discusses how, if God forbid, we sin, all the bad things that will happen, there is a silver lining there where the Pasuk says that the nations that throw us off of our land, they will not find respite in Eretz Yisrael. They will not find Eretz Yisrael to be an hospitable place. It will not be a place that other nations are able to live in. If they throw us out, it will become completely inhospitable. We know that is the case throughout the centuries. Eretz Yisrael has been a place where very few people have lived. It has been nomads and Bedouins and like that, just roaming around. It has not been a place which has been settled ever since we were thrown out of there. And when does it start to become settled? When we start to move back. This is one of the primary arguments that we have against the Arabs, where they claim, oh no, it's been their place. They never cared about it. They didn't use it. They didn't live there. As long as we weren't there. It's only once we show up, you know how it is, right? One of the kids says, I want to sit in that seat. And then the other kid jumps in that seat. Why'd you take that seat? Because he wanted it. Right? So that claim that the Arabs have is completely false. They've never been able to live there. But that's a bracha that Hashem has made, which really proves that it's ours. If they throw us out, they can't live there. It will not sustain a society. A thriving society can't do it if we're not there.
Perhaps if Jews kick out other Jews.
Alright, let's not go there. I don't know. I don't know the answer. The one of the brachos that we find is that the flowering of the land of Eretz Yisrael is a symbol of the returning of the exiles. As it says in Pasuk Ches over here, verse 8, it says, "V'atem arei Yisrael, you, the mountains of Yisrael, anpechem titenu, you will give your branches, uferyachem tisu, and you will lift up your fruits, mi'ami Yisrael, for my nation Yisrael." In other words, as long as my nation's not coming home, then you're not producing fruit. You're not producing anything. There's no need. Eretz Yisrael is not a land that anybody can use. There's no need for it to produce. It's like it shuts down. If we're not there, it doesn't produce. There's no need for it to produce. But ki kervu lavo, but once we're close to coming home, start to flower, start to grow, start to produce. That is a bracha that Hashem gives.
What's ki kervu lavo?
The Jewish people are close to coming home.
Okay.
We find with the reign of Melech Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who was very close to being Mashiach. He was the one who had the war with Sancheirev. Sancheirev had conquered the whole world except for Yerushalayim. And when he got to Yerushalayim, his army was destroyed, miraculously destroyed. And Chizkiyahu was very close to being Mashiach. At that point, there are two things that night that happens. The night, which is Pesach night, that Sancheirev's army is completely decimated, two things happen. Hashem tells Gabriel to go and destroy the army of Sanherib, but on his way he's supposed to give a bracha to the trees and the land that it should grow, that it should produce fruit, things should produce, because the geula, the redemption, even though there they weren't in exile, but they were being destroyed and they were saved, the redemption of the people always is accompanied by a flowering of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael reflects us. And the fact that we have seen it with our own eyes in the past 60 years, the fact that we have seen it, that we have seen the flowering of the land, and it's true, it's come with a lot of hard work, rolling up your sleeves and getting to work, as the early settlers did, going into Eretz Yisrael, it's true. But two things. First of all, it wouldn't have worked, it couldn't have grown, even had they rolled up their sleeves and gotten to work, had it not been for Hashem's bracha. But second of all, the fact that they were able to do it, the fact that they were given the ability to go there and do it, that's something which was new. Hashem gave the ability to His people to go and roll up their sleeves and make the land produce again, to make the desert green. That was something which hadn't happened for centuries. That is a siman. It's a symbol of the fact that we are coming home. Now, we're not there yet. Even those who are living there are not there yet. We know we're not yet at a point of geula, of total redemption. But it is symbolic of something happening. There's something going on. This is really the debate over whether the words in the prayer for the state of Israel, whether to add in the words Reishis Tzmichas Geula Seinu or not. Whether we say that the state of Israel is the beginning of the blossoming of our redemption. Everybody agrees that it has some significance. Everybody agrees there's something going on which has never happened, which for hundreds of years, for thousands of years, hasn't happened. And it is clearly the start of something. The problem with that line is that it makes it appear as if the current state of affairs has some resemblance to what ultimately redemption is, and it's not. There is no resemblance whatsoever between the current state of Israel and what the ultimate geula will look like. And so it is a little bit, that's the argument not to say those words, because the words are a little bit misleading. The words make it seem, this is the argument against those words, but the words make it seem as if, yeah, the state, the way it is right now, is okay, and when Mashiach comes, it'll just be the same thing, just a little bit better. It'll be the same kind of state, just more. More power, more autonomy, etc. But really, when Geula does come, it will be a completely transformed situation, not just here in America, but in Eretz Yisrael as well. There will be no resemblance whatsoever between the Geula Eretz Yisrael that will be set up in the future and what we have today. So that's the argument against those words. As I said, the argument for the words, though, is that there's clearly something happening. And the flowering of the land is not an accident. That is a siman that it's kerevu lavo. They're close to coming home. We're on the doorstep. We're not actually there yet, but we're on the doorstep. What a question.
What does that geula look like? I mean,
what does the geula look like?
To hang on to that will happen. Not in Israel, it's going to be different. There'll still be those who follow God directly, and there'll be those who will be a little more lax. That's the nature of man, yes?
No. Well, I can't tell you exactly, but there'll be no Knesset. Right? It's not a democracy. It's a monarchy. Mashiach is king.
He's going to be king.
Yeah, right? He's king. No democracy. Okay. There'll be a monarchy.
What else? Give us something to hang on to.
There'll be a Beis HaMikdash.
Okay.
There will be a Sanhedrin, right? There will be all the points. This is what actually I'll speak about.
What about Tchiasa Mesim?
It's not clear when Tchiasa Mesim happens. We don't really know all the sequence of events of the future, but we do know that these things will take place. Amalek will be destroyed. Whoever Amalek is, these things will happen.
For Israel or the whole world, it will be destroyed.
Amalek will be destroyed from the whole world.
Okay. Won't everyone realize that God is the true God?
Yes, to a certain what that means, that they're going to realize Hashem is the true God. So what is does there won't be any more idolatry, but what will that mean for them? It's not we don't know.
It said that after a certain point, whatever that point is, that they can't become garish anymore because too clear.
Yeah.
That that's the right path.
Yeah, yeah. But they can keep the seven mitzvahs.
Right.
Seven mitzvahs they know, they can keep. Yeah,
and
so...
Wouldn't every chief, I mean, Shalom in the sense of no conflict? I mean, is that part of the Messiah or...
It seems that way, but again, we don't know exactly what happens when. We don't know. These are all brachos that happen in the future. We don't know when they all happen. The Rambam writes that the world will continue in its normal way, except for the fact that there will no longer be Shibud Malchios. We will no longer be subjected to the rest of the world. We will be completely autonomous, and just the opposite. They will be concerned about us. We're the ones who will be in control. So, but that in itself, think about it, if the nation that is in control of the world, the one that everybody else is afraid of, is a nation that's God-fearing and has a monarch that, like Chizkiyahu who did, he put a sword in the Beis HaMedrash and said, anybody who doesn't learn gets this. You know, he made it clear, this is what we stand for, this is what we do. Well then, it doesn't matter if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, you're living in, you know, in Tibet. You make sure that you follow the true God. So, there's going to be a major change happening.
Don't they already follow the true God? It's just that they get there in their own way, which is eventually will be enlightened. I mean, they are worshiping.
The true God means the true God. That's not so clear that they're worshiping one God. You have to worship one God. The nations of the world have to worship one.
Uh huh. The Christianity.
Not clear.
But it's not clear. Where they're getting to that
one. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Not necessarily.
And a lot of them don't even keep their religion so much. They'll call themselves something, but how much are they practicing?
Well, that's certainly
true about Jews. That's true too. So this is this. Oh, I don't know how late it is. I'm sorry. Let me make one more point before we break, and that is that Hashem says, "I'll bring the people back, and I'll bring back the animals, the people. You will no longer reject the people from the land." And we said, "I'm sorry, I know we're a little bit over time. Just give me a moment here, because this is very important." That it says that in Pasuk Yud Dalet 14. Actually, start with 13. It says, "They said about you, right, that you are a land that eats man." And then he says in 14, "Therefore I say that you will no longer eat man." This is an exact reference to what the Meraglim said. The Meraglim said about Eretz Yisrael, "Eretz ocheles yoshveha hi." It's a land that consumes its inhabitants. They saw people dying. They said, "Oh, this is a land, this is a death land. This is a land that kills people. It consumes its inhabitants." Hashem says, the nations of the world say that about Israel. It's so hard for us to recognize this because we live in an era when Israel is a thriving nation. It's a thriving country. But go back 100 years and it's desolate. There's nothing there. And the nations would say about it, "Oh, it's a cursed place." Isn't that what Mark Twain said? "It's a cursed land. There's nothing here. There's nothing going on here. It's desolate. It can't sustain life. It's a land that eats its inhabitants."
Well, it had swamps and malaria.
Swamps. It's a sick place. No, that's the way they talked about it. They the shame that they heaped upon it. Who would want to be there? So Hashem says that they're saying that about you, Eretz Yisrael, but that's going to change. The Meraglim, when they said it's an Eretz Ocheles Yosheveha, a land that consumes its inhabitants, they weren't wrong. This is such an important thing to understand. The Meraglim didn't lie. They weren't wrong. They were telling the truth. It is a land that consumes its inhabitants if its inhabitants don't follow Hashem. That's the nature of the land. The land will consume those who are not deserving to be there. That's what the land does. But that's not what you call it. You don't call it a land that consumes its inhabitants because that's Lashon Hara. It's true, but it's Lashon Hara. Because what we focus on is the positive, which is that for those who do follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is a land that is a beautiful, perfect, wonderful place to be, where we can serve Hashem the best, where we can get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where the land reflects our service of Hashem, and where we can truly connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that we're supposed to.
But were they talking only about the Jewish people, or were they just talking about the inhabitants of the land?
They were talking about the land in general. The land consumed. They saw that they saw the Canaanim were being consumed. So they said, oh, it's the land that consumes its inhabitants.
15 is tough to understand, though. I shall no longer let you hear the disgrace of the nations. Why?
Means the nations will no longer disgrace you. The disgrace of the nations means the nations' words of disgrace.
Because we're going to be flowering, we're going to be thriving. And we shall no longer have to bear their taunts. Neither shall you bereave your nations. Neither shall you bereave your nations any longer.
Right. Bereave here means to reject, throw them off. Mm-hmm. You're not going to throw them off then. Yeah, the second Beis HaMikdash was not a complete redemption. It was a redemption, but it was not a complete redemption. Some of these things came true then, but not everything.
So it's not referring to that here.
It's referring partially to them, but primarily to the future. Yeah, as we know, Yechezkel is going to tell us the architecture of the third Beis HaMikdash.
That's going to come from Shemayim, right? The third one.
Yeah.
After year one at all.
After what?
Were there times you'll call the golden age of thing, but that's nice. So, did Israel flourish like these 60 years after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the last one? Did it ever flourish? Did it ever produce the fruit?
Not any means.
We don't know of anything of that.
It was a desolate place. I guess it's swamps, malaria.
Because we were not there?
Yeah.
When Mashiach comes, you know, he's going to be like a regular person, he's going to have a family, and he's also going to die?
I don't know if he's going to die, and I don't know what's going to happen at that point. When he appears on the scene, he will be a regular person, except that he will be second to Moshe in prophecy, and greater than Shlomo in wisdom. Right. So I'm not sure what that means about being regular anymore. It's hard to call the person regular.
Yeah, it's pretty. Even if he's very wise, you know, if he's a human being.
Yeah, but we have never seen a prophet, and we're talking about someone who's not just a prophet. We're talking about a greater prophet than Yechezkel.
Well, that's in terms of the talents he gave him. But if you're a human being in this environment, does that mean that you're going to live to be 100?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happens with life and death after he comes.
If he's going to be a regular person, does that mean that we're going to have another king after that?
Not sure. Don't know. It's a possibility. The right answer is we have to bring it so we can find out, right? Let's make it happen and we'll know. Your curiosity should make us bring Mashiach. Let's all get curious.
Main.